Welcome to the EduGals podcast. We are your co-hosts, Rachel Johnson
and Katie Atwell. We are here to bring you tips and tricks to help you integrate technology into your classroom.
In this episode, Katie and I are going to be diving into Google Arts and Culture.
We are going to share all the different features and areas on their website, along with some different activities and suggestions of courses where you can really dive in and use these resources.
Let's get started. We are going to start off with some news and updates from the Twitterverse and beyond. So the first one we actually came across just this morning as we're recording this, and it's a really exciting announcement from Moat in that Moat is now integrated into Gmail.
Yes. So for those who are unfamiliar, Moat is essentially an extension that you can use to record your voice. So, you know, taking voice notes for students, giving feedback, and now for sending emails.
Yeah, it's really neat. I'm looking at the GIF for their Twitter post, which we will include in the show notes for you. But it looks like the Moat button is going to be added into your Compose window, just down at the bottom right beside your Send button. And so that makes it really, really super easy and quick to be able to send a voice message with your email.
And if you're wondering what it will look like for the recipient, if they have Moat installed, then they'll actually be able to listen to the audio note right from within that message. And then they can also reply right away using their own voice. If they don't have Moat or they're on a cell phone, they will end up receiving a clickable link or card that will open up a new tab, and then they can listen to it there.
This is just so cool. Like, I have to say that. It is just so cool. I love Moat. It's constantly being updated and upgraded. And I think this is really neat too. It's almost like it's taking Gmail to the next level now and to a place where we haven't really seen before, and making it super easy to add in audio to your messages.
Yes, no, I love it. The second piece of news is actually a question we had from one of our listeners. And so the question was, is it possible to change the background color of a text box in Jamboard? The quick answer, no, technically you cannot. However, we do have a bit of a workaround. And so our workaround would be create your text box, type in your text, but then use the shape option to create a square or a rectangle, whatever it is that you need. And that can actually go underneath that text box layer. So you will have to make sure you change the order of those so that the text is on top and that square is below, or I guess send it back is the language that is used. And then that way you can have that color underneath or behind that text box.
Yeah, and there's some really nice sort of shapes in there as well. So when you click on the shape tool at first, it defaults to a circle. But if you click on it a second time, you know, I'm kind of thinking that you could use the regular rectangle, but then they also have a rounded corners rectangle, which might look a bit nicer. They also have a bar. They have arrows, like they have a whole bunch of different shapes in there. So you can go in and take a look and decide what kind of shape you even want behind your text box. And then just kind of going back to the order, if you're changing the order for your shapes in your text boxes, you're just going to want to access that through the three-dot menu for each of the text box and the shape. And so when you go to the order, you're going to want to bring your text forward and then bring your shape to the back.
So just in case you're listening, what we'll actually do is create a screencast video showing you how you can make this work. And we'll go over the steps as well in that video. But yes, I hope that helps.
And we'll put that in our show notes along with the other news update that we talked about with Moat today. So you can access those show notes at edugals.com/40. That's edugals.com/40.
And now onto our featured content.
This week, Katie and I are going to be diving into Google Arts and Culture.
Yeah, we're going to share some of like the more, I guess, general categories that you can kind of search on Google Arts and Culture, because it is a monster. There is so much there. But our goal is to kind of share, you know, curriculum ties and things that you can do with your students, whether it be for a course, maybe some team building, community building type activities, and a little bit of fun.
Yeah, it really is a beast.
Whew. Yeah.
We just spent the past 45 minutes just kind of exploring a little bit because we're not entirely super familiar with this tool either. So this is a good learning experience for us as well. There is so much in here, though. It is crazy.
Yes. So the first time I had to learn this tool, at least superficially, or, you know, to get a good idea of how to navigate a little bit, was during our level 2 training. But, you know, I was excited about it. I think I used it once with my Spanish class, and then I forgot all about it. So I think we brought it up in a previous episode, and then we kind of decided we should actually do a full episode. And there's so much in it. Like, I'm remembering again how wonderful it is, and it's also improved, and it's a lot more interactive now. Yeah, so we thought we'd bring it back. Why not?
So I guess we should start off with where to access this and where to actually get started with Google Arts and Culture. So if you're on a computer, then you can go to artsandculture.google.com, and that's going to take you to the homepage. But there are also apps available for Google Arts and Culture that actually have a few extra fun little features. And so you can get that on the Google Play Store, or you can get that on the Apple Store, depending on what device you're using.
Yeah. And then once you get there, it's kind of just playing around. Like when I first got there, I would just look at the home screen. I would see what's on there and kind of go from there. So for me, at the top of my home screen, there's a whole bunch of different interactive experiences where you can actually kind of click on one and give it a try. Obviously, and I think this is the one we mentioned in a previous episode, is the Blob Opera, which is really kind of cute and fun. You can actually make them sing. And there's 4, I think, different blobs. You have a bass, a tenor, a soprano, and the one that I always forget. But yeah, no, so it's kind of fun. It's cute.
I just tried it.
Yeah, it's, and you can kind of drag, like there's a bar of different pitches, so you can kind of drag as to what note you want them to sing, and then it will actually do harmony amongst all 4 of them.
Plus, I mean, you got to admit, they are super cute.
Yes, they are. But no, so that's kind of fun. I think this would be great for younger kids. I'm not going to lie, though, I think it's fun. So even teenagers. So if you're in like a vocal music class, this might actually be kind of fun to do. And you can actually record a song that you're kind of making. They also have songs that you can just listen to. So it's cute, it's fun, and it's kind of funny to watch.
Yeah, it's amazing. What do you have in your interactive experiences beside the Blob Opera?
I have 8 art galleries to explore from home, explore the Easter Island Moai heads from home, take a picture with Frida Kahlo, and color in Big Ben.
I think what I really like about Google Arts and Culture is every time you jump onto the website, at the top where it says choose your interactive experience, you actually get different things. So right now, Katie has something different than what I have there. I have the Blob Opera as well, but I also have a few different things. And I think it's nice because it brings some of the highlights and probably the more popular pieces from Google Arts and Culture. And so it's a really nice way to start exploring within this tool.
So below those interactive experiences, it asks what you want to explore. And then it has 4 different categories. They could be in different order, but the order in which I have it is places, museums, artworks, and games. So if you click on places, for example, it will open up a listing of different places where you can see a variety of different collections, whether it be artwork, museums. Sometimes they do different collections based on like a natural park. There's lots of different things there. So it's a collection of art, images, tours, so many different things. The same goes for museums. So there's, I think, over 2,000 museums that you can access all around the world. So it's definitely worth checking out, especially if you are, like, if you are teaching an art class. There's lots here. So depending on the type of art you want them to do research on, or if you're doing like an open project where they can choose a style of art or a time period, there's lots to choose from.
Yeah, and you can also dive into the artworks as well. And so instead of looking by museum, you can look by artist, which is kind of nice because then when you click on the different artists, it brings up, again, different stories about the artists themselves, as well as all of their different artworks. And you can organize stuff in terms of popularity, time, or by color.
Huh, I kind of like that.
Yeah, it's really neat. I think the fun one, though, is games.
I think we need to talk
about the games a little bit, because we got lost down that rabbit hole for a little while.
And it's actually kind of fun. So the first one, and I think it's first because it's the last one that we did together, was the puzzle party. So you can actually invite people to do a puzzle with you. And what it does is it takes a famous piece of artwork, and then it makes it into a puzzle. And then you have to put it together with your friends and family or whomever that you want to play with.
Yeah, it's really just a fun little thing. But if you wanted to focus on building community in your classroom, why not, right? I'm not sure what the limit is in terms of the number of people that can be on a puzzle, but you could create little breakout rooms and have your groups in breakout rooms and then them working on some puzzles together. Yeah, and then you can learn a little bit more about the paintings as well after you've put the puzzle together. So you could connect it to curriculum as well, but you could just use it as a fun little community building activity.
And they do have different levels of difficulty. So you can do easy, medium, or hard, which is kind of fun. But yeah, no, it's really neat. I like it. I enjoyed doing this puzzle party.
They've also got a couple of crosswords. They have a visual crossword as well as, you know, your typical traditional type crossword puzzle. The visual crosswords, though, are like really mind-blowing, eh?
It's actually great for art students. So if you've been studying different time periods and different artists and whatnot, it's really neat. So what it does is, instead of putting in words, it will give you a whole bunch of different paintings. And then the crossword is essentially categories or different ways of dividing the painting. So they'll give you different descriptors. And then you have to decide which of those paintings belongs in that category. And then you kind of drag and drop. Once you do them all, you can have the game then remove all of the incorrect painting pieces that you have dropped. So then you can kind of go back and go and do it again.
It's really neat. I just tried it. And so, yeah, it moves you through different levels as well, which is really, really cool. Okay, I'm not getting sucked into that rabbit hole. So
the other crossword is your traditional crossword, but with a focus on culture. So they call it the cultural crossword. Yeah, no, I think that's all you really need to say about that. It's pretty challenging, but it's fun. I don't know. It's neat.
I could see those being like really great review games.
When I was coaching Reach to the Top, so it's like a trivia type of team. This is actually good for them because culture tends to be like arts and culture is one of those topics that most of them aren't as familiar with, whereas history, geography, etc., like they're buzzing in to get those answers so quickly. So this is kind of neat for those kids who love trivia and want to increase that knowledge.
There's another game too, What Came First. So I think that one's pretty neat because it's going through different historical dates. And so this would be a really great game to play with any kind of history class or even like art history and those sorts of things.
And the faster you answer accurately, that is, the more points you get. It's actually like, it's kind of very competitive, even though I'm only playing against myself, because it makes me want to get high points.
And then finally in there, they've got an art coloring book. I mean, what's not fun about coloring, right?
Yeah, definitely. So you get to actually paint or I guess digitally paint a famous painting, and you can kind of change up the coloring, like the colors if you want, or you can try to do it traditionally how it was first painted.
Yeah, so it gives you the image of the painting as well that you can kind of go back and reference to. So it's really neat because you can try and recreate the art. You can make it as easy or as challenging as you want to, basically. So the games are a lot of fun.
Yes, they are. And I think students would love them. For me on the homepage, the next one down is like a daily challenge. And I don't know if you have that, but my daily challenge is finding hidden details in different artwork pieces.
See, my daily challenge is a puzzle party. So piece together the most famous wave from art history. Ah. It's even an emoji. So yeah, you can play a puzzle there.
So I actually kind of love that they're different, because that means that your students are probably going to have different daily challenges. And I think that almost starts another conversation. It makes it a little more fun.
Now, below that, I've got what's your favorite color?
Yes. And this is all about fashion and textiles from around the world. So if you're teaching a fashion class, this is perfect.
Now, mine actually has discover over 1,000 colorful Indian miniature paintings. So I don't think it's just fashion. I think it's art as well. Again, every time you come back and visit Google Arts and Culture, it's going to be something different.
I love that that's different. I didn't expect that. But no, and I like, to me, this opened up the fact that they have fashion as something that you can actually search and look at. And yeah, no. So either way, I like that there is so much built into this site.
Yeah, the homepage is really insane. It just keeps going on and on and on in terms of all sorts of different suggestions and different places that you could explore. Below that, I do have like a big sort of thing saying explore a museum from home, which is just kind of takes you into those museum collections. Again, it's just highlighting one versus going in and finding all the different museums. But below that, I've got play with art using your phone.
Yes.
So exploring with augmented reality. And I think this is really neat because if you get the app for your phone, you can actually take the different artworks, or they have a whole bunch of different 3D things like animals or skeletons and different types of artifacts there that you could bring into your environment. And how neat is that?
I know. I kind of like that.
So you can put yourself into artwork. If you take a picture of yourself and you choose the style, yeah, you can actually stick yourself into the artwork. I just did it. It's kind of crazy.
So try to see if you have the art selfie, because you take a selfie and then what it does is it discovers your artistic twin. So I think it actually searches different art databases to find similar facial features.
It does. I tried it. I have my hair up and I have my headphones on. So it was picking out a bunch of male counterparts. I guess apparently my facial features are very male when I have my hair up, which is not cool, but... Yeah, there's some really neat things in here. So in terms of the app itself, when you click on, there's a little camera icon at the bottom, and you click on that, you have things like art filter. So you can try filters based on artifacts from museums, art transfer, which you take a photo and transform it with classical artworks. You can do an art selfie, so discovering portraits that look like you. And art projectors, so you can see how the artwork looks in real size.
Ooh.
There's a pocket gallery, so you can wander through immersive galleries and get up close to art. And then a color palette, so you can find art using the colors of your photo. So there's some really neat things that you can do with your camera within the app that you can't do on the web-based version.
Back to the actual website, a little more towards the bottom of the home screen or as you keep scrolling, there's actually an area where you can choose an activity. And the whole point of this is to kind of get creative at home. And the thing I really like is two of the three that they suggest are actually offline. So they have a whole activity book that you can print out. And then you can have your kids or even yourself, if you're interested, doing some different coloring or some different, you know, color by numbers, whatever the case may be. And typically they are all actual like famous pieces of artwork. And so it's really neat. The other one that they have is Mimic a Monet. So you can actually make your own famous painting with sponge and cardboard. So to me, this is really neat because my daughter loves to do like videos and to follow the videos for drawing and painting and stuff. And this would be totally up her alley, because this would be very fun for her. She loves this stuff. So I like how they give you a video. They tell you kind of the techniques and when to do what, and then you create your own.
They even have scavenger hunts. Have you seen the scavenger hunt there?
No.
So I have one that says, can you find Whistler's mother? And so you search at Paris museums for the Victorian Mona Lisa. And then I've also got travel the world with a penguin.
Yeah, I did see that one.
That sounds cute.
The other thing that I'm kind of interested in, there's a whole section where it says incredible views from the top. And so you can actually visit sites from angles that are typically not seen. So there's like 5 Paris rooftops, the Taj Mahal, 8 views from different skyscrapers. It's kind of neat because it's not a perspective that you would typically get to see, or an image or angle that you would normally see of a building.
They also have lots of stuff that you can explore with Street View as well. And that you're probably finding in a variety of the different kind of explore kind of places, like the museums and different places. I do have a section on my homepage. It's pretty far down the homepage, but you can go in and explore all kinds of stuff from a street view as well, which is really neat.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. This homepage just keeps going. So really, I recommend just looking at it. See what's there. See what works with your students and your class or even your personal interests, because there's so much information.
And the scary thing is it changes every time you come back to the site.
Yeah.
So your homepage is never going to be the same.
Yeah.
You always get a different experience. Now, any of the activities or different places or anything that you find when you click on them, you do get a lot of different options. It depends on what you're clicking on, but most of the time you have a heart that you can click on, and that's going to add that to your favorites. So I highly recommend, once you find something that you really like and you don't want to lose it again, favorite it so that it ends up in your favorites. And then you always also get the three dots connected by lines, like the sharing type icon. And when you click on that, it does give you some options for sharing the thing that you have found. So you can share it by a variety of different social media, through email, through Google Classroom, or you can just copy the link to it.
Yeah, so if you're a Google Classroom user, this is actually a great way to share it. So if this is something you want to explore that day, instead of having them go to the Arts and Culture site on their own and getting lost in the homepage like we did, it will actually link them directly to that collection or topic, whatever you've chosen.
It brings up another pop-up window. You select your class, and then you can choose an action. So you can create an assignment, you can ask a question, make an announcement, or create material. So you can fully create assignments from here using those pieces from Google Arts and Culture.
That's amazing.
It's definitely a time saver, for sure.
And so now perhaps we go over the various, the pancake menu is massive. So I know some people call it the hamburger menu, pancakes, I don't know. It's the three horizontal lines. It's huge.
Yeah, and a lot of them we've kind of talked about from the homepage, because the homepage is pulling from all of these different areas within Google Arts and Culture and giving you little snippets of the different areas. I think just to really kind of give you a flavor of what you're going to see when you dive into any of those specific places.
I mean, the top four are typically, or exactly, the four that you can actually see on the top right-hand side of your webpage. So home, explore, nearby, and favorites. Favorites can actually be found in your profile, which is in the horizontal menu. If you click there, you'll be able to see all of the different things that you have saved. So it also puts them into different categories. So items, experiments, stories, themes, topics, and anything else that you have chosen that would fit a different topic.
Now, it's really interesting that Google's chosen the word favorites on the top menu and profile on the side menu. I'm surprised they haven't kept that consistent between the two. It's really strange.
Yes, I agree. That was strange to me, and I was wondering if there was more to the profile section, but there's really not.
So just know that they're interchangeable. Profile, favorites, means the same thing.
Now, at first I thought that searching locations was the same as nearby, but it is not, my friends. I like nearby because it will pull up a map. And if you have location turned on, it will find all of the different locations close to you that they have on Google Arts and Culture. If you don't, I believe Paris is the default, so it will take you to Paris. And it is amazing how many things they have listed there. But from there, you can just scroll out. It's like any other map. And then you can kind of explore different countries, different cities, continents, etc.
Now, if you do run into the issue of it not picking up your local location, for me, I'm on a Mac. I did have to go into my location settings in my settings panel and enable it. So I had to go in and change the security features for that and allow it to access my location. So you might have to do that. Just something to keep in mind. It's really neat, though, because then you can kind of click on some of the locations and explore around where you are. So, yeah, I like it.
So the next one down in our menu is collections. And so this is where I feel like, based on what I've seen, this is where it's listed more as places you can see. So museums or big historical locations. So if you are looking for a specific museum or gallery, this is kind of where you would find that.
Yeah, and you can, there's a couple of options up at the top. So you can search through all of them. You can look at them through A to Z, or you could look at them on a map, which is kind of cool. So you can go and pick your location to try and narrow it down. Like say, you know, oh, I know where that museum is, but I can't remember the name of it. And so that's a really nice feature to be able to go onto a map and narrow down the location and then go and find what you're looking for.
The next ones I find a little more fun, and I'm not sure why. It's called themes. And essentially what they've done is they've put together a whole bunch of different images, collections, etc., on a specific topic or theme. For example, they have the art and soul of Mosul. I don't know if I'm saying that correct, but it's a city in Iraq, and it's looking at how they are reviving and recovering through culture. And it's beautiful. It's so much. And it's, they have interviews, they have artwork, old and new. They have images of the historic streets, 3D images as well. So you can explore in 3D some of the different areas. It's fascinating.
It is. There's some really nice ones in there too, especially we're recording this in February, so it's Black History Month. There are a bunch of different themes in here that go through, like, for example, Black History and Culture, or Black History and Culture UK, Black History in Brazil. So there's a variety of different sort of themes that you could go in and explore. I mean, it doesn't have to be in February, but you could do this really anytime. And I actually used a lot of these collections last year to create a display in our library for Black History Month, where I found different historical figures, not even historical, but ones that are popular in a variety of different areas. So I found Black athletes and different pieces from arts and culture and different astronauts and like all different sorts of stuff. And I created a display where I had the person, I had an image that went with it, and then I had QR codes that the students could then scan, and it would take them to the collection in Google Arts and Culture.
Nice.
And so it was nice to be able to just display that and have a variety of different places where students could start exploring some of Black history. You know, and it wasn't your traditional stuff either. It wasn't just the Martin Luther King and those kind of historical figures. Like I really purposely went off the beaten path.
Yeah, you want to make sure you're introducing new as well and showing a different lens.
Now, below that is the experiments. And this is not just experiments through arts and culture. When you click on that, it does take you to the arts and culture experiments. So you've got the blob opera in there. You've got the different games that we talked about earlier. There's a variety of other different experiments in there as well. But then if you click on at the top, there's a collections, then this is all of Google's experiments. Wow. So you could really go down the rabbit hole here, and experiments is probably like a whole other episode to talk about because it is enormous what you can find in here. But there's some really, really neat things. I would highly suggest you just click on it and start exploring yourself.
And a lot of these, I like, they're more interactive, which I think makes it great for students. So definitely take a look at the different experiments, find one that works with your students based on what you're teaching, etc. And then, you know, give it a try.
Just kind of scrolling down too, there are experiments in here that are linked to a variety of different curriculum areas. It's not just the arts.
No.
So things like they've got a coastline paradox. It takes a map and a street view experiment visualizing actual and predicted global sea levels. How cool is that when you're talking about climate change in science, right? So there's some really nice connections to curriculum areas that you might not think go with Google Arts and Culture.
Yes, and even English, for example. I mean, yes, it's kind of artsy, but you know, you don't typically see a lot of authors and novels on the main page there. But there's actually one called An Ocean of Books, and it opens a fantasy map, and you get to look at a whole variety of authors and novels, and they give like some facts about different authors and stories and whatnot. So it's kind of neat.
There's also something called Infinite Patterns. I could see connections to math curriculum there. So you create one of a kind patterns using machine learning, but then connecting that back to your math curriculum, you could do that as well. So yeah, lots and lots of options in here. We're not going to continue going down this rabbit hole though, or else this podcast episode is going to be enormous.
Okay, I'm going to do one more though, because this is like a blast from the past for me. This brings me back to my childhood. They have where on Google Earth is Carmen Sandiego?
Oh yeah, I remember that. That was making the rounds a couple years ago.
Yeah. And so they have it. And you have to try to track her around the globe. And this brings back so many memories. The show, and there was also a game that I used to play on the computer way back in the day. So like, this is awesome. But I digress.
Yes. Okay, so diving back over to arts and culture now, because that opened up a whole other window and a whole other world, which we're leaving. You've got a variety of different ways that you can kind of take a look at art and history in your pancakes menu. So you can look at it through artists. And again, that just takes you back to that menu that we talked about earlier. You can also look at mediums. So you can look at, for example, paper or ink or watercolor paintings. So you can really dive into a variety of different mediums there. You've also got art movements. So that's different eras, right? Renaissance or modern art, contemporary art, all sorts of different things in there. Pop art, that's really neat. So yeah, different ways that you can filter and look at different components of art.
The next two, if you are a history teacher, these are phenomenal. So they have historical events, and then they also have historical figures. And so in the events, it is broken down into different, well, historical events. So World War II, World War I, the Holocaust, Victorian era. Like there's so many different historical events that are on this page. So if you are a history teacher and you want to incorporate some images, like real images, this is an awesome way to do that. In terms of the historical figures, it's very similar. So it's just divided by people. And you can go ahead and search by alphabetically. So you can do an A to Z based on time, or you can look at all of them, which is very overwhelming.
Yeah, and then finally in that sort of clump of different things, you can also go into your places again. Again, that's basically the same as the explore different places that we already talked about on our homepage. The last three are kind of just your typical kind of housekeeping type things. So the About tab just tells you a bit more about Google Arts and Culture. The View activity allows you to go back and look at some of the history in terms of your search history. And then sending feedback. Again, if you've got feedback to give to Google about how they can improve Google Arts and Culture, you can do that there.
And that is Google Arts and Culture.
Now, certain things in our school account are turned off, but if I look at Google Arts and Culture in my personal Google account, there are a couple of extra things in that pancake menu. So there's achievements, and that one's fun. So I'm going to come back to that one in a minute. And then there's also settings. So you can decide if you want to be able to earn achievements or not, and you can also delete your achievements in there. So the achievements are really cool because they are basically badges that you can go and collect as you do different pieces within Google Arts and Culture.
Aha, I like that.
I like that too. And I guess I understand why it's turned off. Well, I don't know if I fully understand why it's turned off in our domain.
No, I don't. Because this is kind of motivating for kids. It's kind of fun. It gives them something to, I don't know, collect.
They probably just have it turned off in terms of like tracking data and stuff like that. So I guess from that perspective, I get it. But the badges are a lot of fun. I mean, everyone knows, right? If you're listening to this, that I love a good badge. And so I was super excited. In my personal account, I favorited the Blob Opera and I got the Art Collector badge.
Nice.
I know. So they have 13 different badges in total. They have the Art Inspector, the Adventurer, Art Collector, the Know-It-All. How do you get that one? You answer a quiz question correctly to get that badge. You've also got the Museum Explorer, Connections Explorer, Bookworm, Painting Enthusiast, Curator, Culture Seeker, Chromecast, Color Explorer, and Time Explorer. So there's a lot of different pieces within Google Arts and Culture that you would need to explore in order to be able to collect all 13 badges.
Yeah, and if you click on the badge, it will tell you what you need to do. So that's kind of fun.
So really, I guess our best advice with Google Arts and Culture is just dive in. Go explore it. See what you can find. See what connects to your curriculum or the pieces that you can use to just even build community with your classroom.
There's a whole wide range. And if you don't feel comfortable using this full class, then use some of this stuff as an extension activity, because students love to see real images and things that they can kind of connect what they're learning to the real life. So definitely worth checking it out.
And as we always do, we'll be sure to include all of the links and different pieces of Google Arts and Culture that we've talked about today, including a nice little fun gif of getting a badge, because I made one when I got my first badge. I'm digressing though. So we'll include all of the links and resources that we've talked about in our show notes. You can find our show notes at edugals.com/40. That's edugals.com/40.
And if you like what you've heard and you think that a colleague or friend could benefit, then be sure to share our episode. And don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app, so that you don't miss out on any future content.
And if you have feedback for us, we love to hear from you. So go on to our Flipgrid at edugals.com/flipgrid and maybe tell us, have you used Google Arts and Culture with your students? What are your favorite activities? Like, we would love to be able to feature you in an upcoming episode with your thoughts. So go on there. Or if you don't want to include your voice, which we would really love if you did include your voice, but if you don't want to do that, that's fine. You can also go onto our website and leave us a comment at edugals.com.
Thanks for listening, and see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of our EduGals podcast. Show notes for this episode are available at edugals.com. That's edugals.com. We'd also love to hear your feedback, so leave us a message on our website.
And if you enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe and consider leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. Until next time, keep being awesome and try something new.